Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at Chumbacasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at Chumbacasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAction with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
Montgomery County, Maryland is where businesses go to be next. Home to a highly skilled, diverse workforce, a thriving business community, competitive incentives, and more. MoCo will help transform your business. Visit bnext.thinkmoco.com to see how we can help you be next.
Welcome to the Fandrax Toolshed. If you love Dynasty Leagues and prospects, you came to the right place, because that's what this show is all about. Covering the majors and all levels of the minor leagues to give you the leg up in your Dynasty Leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
All right, Dynasty and Prospect Fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 41 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clegg and Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a loaded episode in store for you all today on a special episode. It's coming out on Saturday, so hopefully we don't catch you guys too much off guard. But so much to talk about this week with the trade deadline and whatnot. We have three episodes this week, one today on Saturday, one on our usual Monday slot, and another on Wednesday. And we have a great guest for this episode here today. But before we bring on that guest, we need to bring on my esteemed co-host from Fantrax HQ, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, what's up, man?
What I gotta say is, wow, that was the most epic trade deadline ever. And I know it's easy to say that. Like, we always say, like, you know, the offseason or the whatever, it was so great. But, like, this was the greatest trade deadline we could have asked for. Like, think about the NBA and how crazy free agency is and all the trades that we get. But the MLB killed it, and I loved it. It was fantastic. It was so much to keep up with. You couldn't keep up with it, honestly. It was just like news popping in every second. We're going to talk about it. It's going to be a fantastic episode. And we have a fantastic guest, and I'm really excited about that. It's first time on the Tool Shed.
We do. Before we bring on that guest, I have to ask you a quick question here, Chris. You know, it's been a tough few weeks for you as a Braves fan. You know, you lost Acuna, and now you have to deal with the loss of the infamous Pablo Sandoval. Are you going to be okay, man?
I think so. Well, hey, he won like four games early on in the year, like with walk-off home runs, like off the bench, pinch hit walk-off. So he did propel us at least to four more wins. So he served his purpose. When Eddie Rosario comes back, I assume that he's going to be better than Pablo. So I think we'll be all right.
Pablo's like the most like clutch, mediocre player in MLB history. It's like him or J.D. Drew. J.D. Drew's contract with us was terrible, but it made up for that one home run he hit against the Yankees in 04. You know, that makes up for everything when, you know, you hit that one home run in a clutch spot. But now let's bring on our guest. Now, as this guest can appreciate as a fellow host, I take pride in my intros when we have guests on this podcast, or just my intros in general. So today I'm bringing on a special guest to introduce this guest. Here he is.
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea? David Mendelsohn. Host of the Triple Play Fantasy. David Mendelsohn. He's really buff and a great analyst. David Mendelsohn. He's going to talk baseball with Eric and Chris. David Mendelsohn. David Mendelsohn.
That's right. David Mendelsohn joins us from the Triple Play Fantasy site and podcast. Mendy, what's up, bud?
Yo, that intro was epic, man. We were just like laughing. I know not everything's going to make the final cut just because of how much we were laughing and going crazy from that intro. But man, I'm so pumped to be here with you two. It's been far too long. I'm so excited to be here on the Tool Shed with you guys.
We're excited to have you, man. You guys have done a great job over at Triple Play with everything, all the sports you guys cover, the site you just started, all the interviews. It's been fun to watch you and everybody grow at that site. So great to have you on here. We got a lot to talk about. But before we get into the show, the usual housekeeping, you can find us all on Twitter. Mendy is at dmendy02. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at AirCross04. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. And go check out at Trip Play Fantasy as well. If you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. And please check out our Patreon for extra written content from both of us, bonus podcasts, private Discord access, access to our live prospect and dynasty rankings, and much more. These perks are available across four different tiers starting at just $5. Or if you want to thank and support Chris and I, you can do so for $1 a month. Sign up today at patreon.com/fantraxtoolshed. And of course, check out all the other great written and audio work we have on the network, including our other podcasts, the On-Campus Fantasy Football Podcast for College Fantasy Football, SP Streamer, and Fantasy Hockey Life. So we got a little bit of everything for you there. But let's go get into our episode now. Like I said, we're talking about the MLB trade deadline. This is part one of our MLB trade deadline extravaganza because there was so much going on, we had to break it into two episodes. So with Mendy today, we'll be talking about MLB players only. We'll mention the prospects that were dealt on each deal, but we'll dig into them in our episode on Monday. So let's get right into it here. So there's about 1.5 million trades that went down over the last few days. Let's start with the Adam Frazier going to San Diego for Tucapita Marcano and Jack Mayfield. Kind of a minor deal, but nice bat going to San Diego here. Frazier, at the time, I forget if he still does or not, was leading the National League in hits. Big average guy. What do you think of that move, Mendy? And what are you a big Frazier guy in general?
I mean, I'm not a huge Frazier guy just because he doesn't give you too much. Like you would think maybe he gives you some stolen bases, but there's not actually a ton there. But he's a lot. I mean, he's great for batting average. He actually, right now, he's fifth in the major leagues in batting average. And he actually is first in all the major leagues in hits right now as well.
He is still first. Okay. I thought he was.
So, I mean, he's definitely going to be, and he's a great contact hitter, one of the best contact hitters in the game. So for that lineup, I think it's a huge upgrade for them. It comes down to, I think, the playing time aspect of how much can you expect playing time from him going forward and then the other Padres guys that you have. And I was just looking at some of the box scores. And the first game that he played, Will Myers sat versus right-handed pitcher James Kaprielian. The next day, Eric Hosmer sat against left-handed pitcher Sean Manaea. And whenever you have Hosmer sitting, that means Cronenworth shifts over to first and Adam Frazier shifts over to second base. When Hosmer's in the game, Cronenworth goes to second, and Adam Frazier's been going into left field, which is what they did against right-handed pitcher John Gray in I believe yesterday's game. But I think, again, it's going to be one of those things. If you have him, he's going to probably be playing, you know, 4 or 5 games a week, and he's going to be somebody that you can expect, you know, what you got from him most of the season, where he's going to get a ton of hits, good batting average, but not a ton of power and not a ton of stolen bases. So I think you kind of know what you get from him at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely fair. I think the move, the value, I think, stays about the same. It was like you mentioned, he's probably going to lose a little bit of playing time as opposed to what he had in Pittsburgh. There was like no competition to his playing time in Pittsburgh. But even if he plays 4 or 5 days a week, I think what offsets that is that he's going to be, he's leading off, and he's let off all 3 of the games he started in front of Tatis, Machado, Pham, Cronenworth, etc. So I think that nice, lineup around him boost kind of offsets the, you know, extra 1 start, maybe 2 starts a week that he does miss. But Chris, what are your thoughts on Frazier going to San Diego here?
Yeah, I don't think it's a ton to talk about for fantasy purposes, really. He's not providing much unless you're looking for a batting average boost. I think the biggest player hurt here is Trent Grisham. I mean, he was already hitting low in the lineup, and now he's bumped to 8th the last 2 days, which is interesting. That I think that hurts his value a little bit. And Grisham's the type of bat that, you know, in my opinion, the OBP skills should be at the top of the lineup, but he's not going to get that now. And he had already been lower in the lineup. He had finally bumped back to the top, you know, the last weekend before the trade. And then when Frazier came over, he's back down 7th and then 8th the last 2 days. So hurts Grisham's value a little bit. And obviously, I think, you know, see a dip in Profar, Myers, Kim, all those guys are going to lose time. So It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But yeah, I think Grisham might be one of the biggest losers here, actually, which is interesting.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I wish he'd be up in the top of the order, because you mentioned the on-base skills definitely warrant a top of the order spot. I'm surprised they don't put him like 2nd, move Tatis to 3rd, Machado to 4th, Cornerbrook to 5th, something like that, just to extend that lineup a bit more. I mean, it's nitpicking. You know, this is a good lineup, basically 1 through 8. So can't really go wrong with any combination of hitters here. But yeah, Grisham moving on to 8th is definitely hurts his value a bit for sure. Yeah, that's a barn burner. We'll start with Adam Frazier on this loaded podcast. Moving on here, we'll get to the big ones eventually. Don't you worry. We got a deal here. A lot of closers changed hands here at the trade deadline. Let's start with a couple. Kendall Graveman and Rafael Montero went to Houston from Seattle for Abraham Toro and Joe Smith. And then Yimi Garcia went to Houston as well. So Houston is stocking up here. I guess, and we also add in here Diego Castillo going to Seattle for JT Chargois? I don't know. The OIS always messes me up there. And Austin Shenton. So Castillo obviously will be the new closer in Seattle over Paul Sewald. But really the question out of all these deals here, who's the new closer going to be in Miami? Because we already know who's going to be. It's still Presley in Houston. It's going to be Diego Castillo in Seattle. But Miami is kind of in flux. For me, like I wrote about this morning in my waiver wire article, I think it's going to be Anthony Bender. I love the stuff that he is, the sinker slider combination. I think he's been the best arm in that bullpen this year. And I think he's, now it's not, they haven't named a new closer yet, so it's kind of still in flux, but I like Anthony Bender here. I don't know how you guys feel. Mendy, who do you got out of this bullpen? Who do you like?
Bend it like Anthony, man. That's how I feel, honestly. I mean, you just look into his profile and it's just fantastic. He's got a 6.7 vertical movement on his sinker, which is elite, and inches on vertical move, I should say. But you go to a Statcast page. I mean, the K percentage, 33% K percentage, hard hit percentage is elite. His expected ERA is a little bit higher than his actual ERA, but not by much. And that sinker is just nasty. And you can tell he has a quick delivery to the plate. He has better velocity on his pitches than the other closer and talking Dylan Floro. I do think that the only thing that kind of scared me a little bit is I saw he was used as an opener yesterday.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So yeah, I'm wondering, which is odd. Yeah, I was like, are the Marlins, you know, what are they doing? That's like, so when I saw that, that kind of gave me a little bit of pause. But I do think he is the better reliever between the two that are being talked about. It's just gonna be a question if the Marlins want to use him in that role.
Yeah, and that slider has been absolutely filthy as well. You know, 164 batting average against, 48.2% whiff rate. So yeah, definitely a great sinker slider combo there. Chris, what are your thoughts? Do you think it's going to be Bender, or do you see Floro getting the spot?
I just think of all the new scenarios for closers, this is one that I don't want to touch because, you know, Bender pitched seventh yesterday. I just think you're going to see Bass get some saves. You're going to see Floro get some saves. Bender may get a couple. It's not a scenario that I really want to deal with for fantasy. So I just think there's better options at this point, like with some of the new jobs opened up, I'd much rather take a shot on than this platoon, in my opinion. I think we'll see a committee here, just my opinion, but we'll see how it shakes out. So it'll be interesting. And you mentioned Seattle. I don't know. I think they've never really settled on like a role type guy. So Castillo may share with Seawald. I'm not dropping Seawald just yet. I kind of want to see what they do with Castillo first. Like, it's easy to assume I think he'll be the closer, but Seawald's pitched so good. I mean, he's pitched better than Castillo has this year.
He has, yeah. Seawald's been an absolute beast this year on that pen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. So I'm not quick to drop Seawald yet because I picked him up several places, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to hold on and see where it goes because I think they may see some split time.
Yeah, I mean, how can you end the SeaWorld experience already? I mean, he's got a 43% K percentage and a 15.7 K per nine. Those type of numbers, I just feel like it's really hard to just completely remove him from the closer role. And Seattle looked like they were kind of, I mean, with Kendall Graveman and Seawald, they were kind of both getting some saves at the end there too. So maybe, you know, Chris is right, maybe they do kind of a committee approach with, you know, yeah, one getting like 60%, one getting 40% or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, Seawald's been, like I said, an absolute beast. That lower arm slot that he comes at you with is very deceiving, and he's got the good stuff. You know, that slider is a great out pitch for him. So yeah, definitely don't drop Seawald yet. But I do think it's going to be Castillo a little more. But I agree, it could be some sort of a committee, but definitely one worth monitoring there and more interesting than the Miami one for sure. But speaking of Miami, though, they made another very interesting deal here, sending Starling Marte out to the Oakland Athletics for Jesus Luzardo, just adding more to that staple of pitchers they have, where they have probably eight or nine guys that are all legit major league caliber arms, maybe even more than that. You know, between the guys they already have in the major league level, the Alcantaras, Trevor Rogers, Pablo Lopez, etc., you know, you add in Luzardo with Sixto and Edward Cabrera and Max Meyer and Eder. The list goes on and on here. But my question for you fine gentlemen is, are either of you buying low on Jesus Luzardo right now in Dynasty Leagues? I know I personally am. Just from what people have been tweeting at me or the questions asked of me on Twitter, especially over the last few days around that trade, people seem to be pretty down on Luzardo right now. Like, some think he's a bullpen arm long term now. Some think he's just not as good as, you know, the other five or six arms around him there. I still think he's a potential top 25 fantasy arm. So I want to get your guys' take. Chris, I'll throw it over to you first. What are your thoughts on Luzardo here?
Yeah, it's pretty easy buy low, and I've been preaching that all year. Like, I think you can throw whatever he's done out the window this year. Like,
yeah,
it's just not been, he hasn't had a fair shake. He's been injured. There's been a lot of fluky stuff that's happened with him. And I don't know, the talent level's so much higher, and you look back, and obviously I think as a pitcher, it's much harder to take the step from the minor leagues to the majors. It's a big talent gap between AAA or AA and the major leagues. And so I'm giving him time. I think he's an easy buy low, and he's an easy hold if you own him in a dynasty league. I'm not selling low on him at all. And now in Miami, if they can develop a changeup, he's going to be nasty. And people want to talk about he's a lead out of the bullpen. Like, we've seen him be a lead out of the bullpen, but I don't think they traded him to be a bullpen guy. So that rotation is going to be nasty. And Luzardo could easily be the best of the bunch. Like, he was my second ranked pitching prospect, you know, as of last year when he graduated off. So I'm buying all day. So I'm happily get Luzardo at a cheaper price, and I like the move to Miami.
Yeah, and the fact that he already has like a decent changeup already, helps the fact that, you know, they don't have to like have him basically learn a new pitch. Like he already has a decent changeup. Yeah, the metrics this year on it weren't great. 296 batting average against, 519 slug, but did have a 30.4% whiff rate on it. Showed a pretty good changeup throughout the minor leagues. And he was still showing a really good curveball this year too. 184 batting average against, 55.3% whiff rate on that curveball. The pieces are there for him to still be a very good pitcher. So I am definitely all in on buying low on Lizardo here. Mendy, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, yeah, without repeating any stats that you guys already said, I mean, let's add in the fact that he went to high school in Miami. So he's going to an area that he knows very well. You also have to add the fact in that you look at Miami's track record with how they've been developing pitching over the years. Is there a better place you'd want a pitcher to go right now than the Miami Marlins? I mean, if anybody can't fix him, Miami's the place you need to go. And again, like Clegg mentioned, like he was consensus, you know, what, first, second or third best pitching prospect within the last year or so, as far as among all the prospect analysts around. I mean, this is a guy, I mean, he was probably untouchable for a lot of people just a year ago. So, I mean, you can look at that 6.52 ERA right now that he has in AAA and people are panicking it. Like buy it. Like people are, if they're panicking, like go get him. Cause I think next year you're going to wish if you didn't get him and you didn't try to acquire him from the people that were panicking, you're going to see him produce and be like, man, I could have had him for X. And I feel so like I just left in the dust. So definitely go get him if you can.
Totally agree. Like I said, a lefty, a young lefty that can hit the upper 90s with his fastball, can, you know, has a good breaking ball, has a makings of a solid changeup. You know, like I said, all the pieces are there for Lizardo to be a very good arm long term. So definitely go out and try to get Lizardo now. And then the other piece of this deal, Starling Marte, I mean, I think there's a slight value increase here. So I think the Oakland lineup around him is going to be better than what was around him in Miami. Like right now, he's in this first three games with the Athletics. He has slotted in second in the order between Mark Canha and Matt Olson, which is a pretty solid place to be. Canha's having a very good year, as is Matt Olson. Mendy, do you think this gives Marte a little bit of a boost here the rest of the season?
Did you say Canha?
What did I say?
I think you said Canha.
did I emphasize the ha on that?
No, yeah, you emphasized the ha, which I think is hilarious.
I didn't realize I said that.
I think it kind of balances out here. So I think, like you mentioned, I think like the RBIs and run scoring opportunities are going to be better, obviously, with Oakland. But what I'm a little bit concerned about in the Oakland atmosphere compared to Miami is that I'm worried about his stolen bases and the fact that you have Mark Canha in front of him, or no, Canha in front of him. And he's an on-base percentage machine. And with him on base, it's going to probably hurt Marte's chances to steal, because Marte was leading off for Miami and was able to be able to get on base, and they didn't have a bunch of guys hitting. So they wanted him to get in scoring position, getting those chances. With the Oakland, I don't think they're going to want, obviously you have Canha in front of him, that's going to be probably on base a lot. And then you have good guys behind him that you're going to probably want to make sure that you don't give up outs if he gets caught stealing. So I think that part makes it balance out, where maybe he loses some stolen bases, but he's going to get more RBIs and runs. As far as ballparks, both project that he was going to have 7 home runs in each ballpark. Both aren't great hitter ballparks. So I think at the end of the day, it's kind of a wash for me.
Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, the ballpark factor is obviously something that stands out to me. Marlins Park isn't great for home runs, but the Coliseum's even worse. And so a fringe power guy like Marte, I could see him losing power. I don't know. I think it's kind of a neutral move from a fantasy perspective. You probably see him hit for similar average. The stolen bases may tick down a little bit. The power may tick down a little bit. So I don't know. I'm not going out of my way to say that it's going to be an increase in value for him.
Yeah, that's totally fair here. The next deal on the docket, Cesar Hernandez went to the White Sox for Connor Pilkington. I love that last name. It's kind of a minor deal, but same time, Hernandez now looks like he's going to be the number two hitter in that still pretty good White Sox lineup. They've been dealing with a lot of injuries this year, but they just got back Eloy Jimenez, but he got hurt again. Hopefully it's not a long-term thing. And they're getting back Luis Robert pretty soon as well. Andrew Vaughn has finally taken off. So right now he's probably going to be hitting second in between most of the time, Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu. So a slight increase for Hernandez in value because Cleveland's lineup around him wasn't the greatest, and obviously White Sox are a bit of an upgrade there. Chris, would you agree with that?
Yeah, the lineup is fantastic, and it's interesting. He's really sacrificed average this year for power. Like, he's already at a career high in home runs this season at 18 through just 425 plate appearances, previous career high of 15 over 708. So interesting to see. Just hitting 234, but, you know, he's a pretty good OBP guy. I think you see that tick up now in a more competitive lineup. Sometimes that really matters. And from a mental standpoint, I think it just gives him a reason to play even harder. So I could see a good value increase here. He's definitely a viable, you know, middle infield option and maybe even second base in deeper leagues.
Yeah. What I want to know, though, is what happened to the speed? Like, he wasn't like a speedster per se, but four straight years, he was between like 15 and 19 steals. And then 2019 went down to 9, 2020, and he hasn't had any since 2019. 0 in 58 games last year, 0 in 97 this year. So that's what, quick math here, 155 games. Basically a full season of 0 speed. So that's kind of concerning and not great. But Mendy, what are your thoughts on Hernandez going to the White Sox here?
I mean, it's kind of interesting you bring that, and maybe that does play. And I was going to bring up, I'm very excited about him. Like Clegg mentioned, he already has a career high in home runs, and we still have a few months of the season to go here. But I'm looking at his BABIP across his career, and the lowest BABIP he's had in a major league season is when he hit 313 BABIP in 2019 with the Phillies. He's at a 258 BABIP right now. So again, maybe the speed factor maybe is why it's down, but I still think to go from 364 BABIP with Cleveland last year to a 258 BABIP this year, I got to think it's got to be somewhat a little bit closer to 300, even with if he's lost some speed. So I would think with that increase in BABIP, that batting average is going to go up. Again, he already has given you 18 home runs. He's also in a lineup now where he's going to be with one of the two or three best lineups in the American League after being with one of the worst lineups in Cleveland. So he's going to have a lot more run scoring opportunities, obviously RBI chances, of course, all that good stuff. So I can't see how this is not great for Cesar Hernandez in any way.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys. It is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just that lineup change in general. Like, how can you be – like, there's not a much better spot to be in baseball hitting between a guy like Tim Anderson, who's always on base, always putting the ball in play, and then Abreu, though he's down a little bit from his MVP season last year, still a very, very good hitter. And then Eloy and Robert and everybody else, Moncada, Andrew Vaughn, just so many good hitters up and down that lineup. So yeah, and the fact that he's probably gonna be hitting second, which I think will stick even when everybody's back. Like, I don't think they're gonna put Robert back up there at second spot in the order initially. He's probably gonna be back down lower on the order, but definitely see that spot sticking for Hernandez. So a lot of power. You know, I think the average, I agree with Mendy, I think the average will tick up here as the season progresses, and the additional power and then the nice run scored he can get. It's just nice that he could run a little bit, but, you know, who knows? We can't win everything. Moving on here, Eduardo Escobar went from the Arizona Diamondbacks to the Milwaukee Brewers for prospects Cooper Hummel and Alberto Kiprian. I think Kiprian is how you say that. Escobar is kind of like a meh player for me, but, you know, one of the things, you know, there's a lot of kind of lineup shakedowns here that happened after the Escobar deal. I guess Heria got demoted to make room for Escobar, which made sense. Heria's been absolutely terrible. And then just in general, I've had a lot of questions asked to me, like, how does this Milwaukee infield shake out? Like, they recently, you know, over the last 2 months, they also acquired Willy Adames from the Tampa Bay Rays, which has been a great move for them. Adames has been absolutely tearing it up. One of the probably top five shortstops in baseball over the last 2 months offensively. And then they also got Rowdy Tellez from the Toronto Blue Jays, who is on fire right now and was the first person I wrote up today in my waiver wire article. So, Chris, I'll go over to you first for Hiria. Are we just done with Hiria at this point? Do you still think, I know we've talked about him, you know, periodically on this podcast over the last several months, but is Hiria just done, or do you think there's still some value there for a nice buy low if you can get him for cheap enough?
I think he needs a change of scenery. I think he just needs to clear his head somewhere new. And, you know, the upside's there. We've seen him. We've seen him perform at a high level. It's just the contact rate and the strikeouts. And, you know, it looked promising when he came back this time, when he returned on June 23rd. Like, I think he had a home run, maybe his first game back. He was looking good. But, you know, before the demotion, the contacts were still an issue. 64% zone contact, 54.5% overall contact, near 40% K rate. It was just terrible. But when he makes contact, it's good contact, like barrel rate of nearly 18% over that span, but just not getting it done. I think if the cost is cheap enough, like where you don't pay hardly anything for him, he may be worth, you know, speculating on, because I think that they move on from him. Wouldn't surprise me if he's DFA'd in the offseason, and he just needs a fresh start somewhere, and maybe that will be a catalyst for him. So not totally out, but I'm not going to pay a high price for him.
Yeah, like if you can get him for this, like a prospect that you're not going to miss, I definitely would at least take that, you know, take that risk. Because if the cost is low enough and it doesn't work out, yeah, whatever. You don't lose any sleep over it. And I kind of think of him as like a poor man's Joe Adell at this point. Like, you know, exciting tools when they, you know, he is making contact, but the contact has not been there. Mindy, what are your thoughts on Hiria, and how do you think this infield is going to shake out? Because personally, I see, this is how I think of it. I see Tellez at first for the most part. Well, I think Wong is going to be entrenched at second base with this, his combination of offense, defense. He's going to be entrenched there. Adames at short, Escobar at third. And then, you know, so what about Luis Urias? I think he'll still play enough and spell, you know, at least three of those positions. So I think all five members of this infield are fantasy relevant. Would you agree with that?
Well, first I have to ask, is this a safe space?
It is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so one of my biggest regrets in life was my first baseball podcast I ever went on was the Five Tool podcast on the Fantrax Podcast Network here. And we were doing a mock draft, and I took Keston Hiura over Lucas Giolito. And I've been living with that every day for the rest of my life, and it feels good to actually talk about it now because
get it's been off haunting your chest,
Mindy. It's been haunting me for a while. So yeah, I mean, as far as Keston Hiura, I'm personally done with him. Like I've had him in a few leagues, a few dynasty leagues, and I've cut bait with him. I'm just not interested with what I've seen. I mean, again, you look in his profile and you see again, 3 years in the league, 30.7% strikeout rate, 2019, not great, but at rookie season, you're like, okay, maybe it'll get better. 34.6 in the shortened season last year, up to almost 40% this year. Like Clegg said, if he's making contact, it's great. And he's great, got a great hard hit percentage. But if he's not making contact, then that's a problem. And it's, you got to think in a season where there's the substance ban, right? And all of a sudden, all these pitchers look a lot more mortal, and that they're having problems being able to have that extra little zip on the ball, the little extra break that they have. It should be a time where hitters should be starting to excel, and he still wasn't excelling. And so if you can't excel in that type of environment, again, maybe he goes to another team and then he turns his career around. But as it stands right now, I'm not interested in him at all.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, I'm not 100% out the door on Hiria, but I'm like 98% out the door. It's getting hard, and I was trying to give him a free pass because, you know, you heard the reports of, you know, the issues within his family, the health issues that were going on with his mother. So I was kind of giving him a free pass. I want him to succeed. He seems so likable, you know, like he's one of those guys, like always has a smile on his face, mm-hmm. like good natured guy. Like those are guys you root for, but it's just getting really hard to, you know, obviously, you know, redraft. He's not rosterable right now, obviously, but dynasty, I guess you hold on. If you have him, I guess you hold on to him because you're not going to get anything for him. And, mm-hmm. and if you can give up a middling prospect for him, that might be worth it. But I wouldn't give any sort of substance for him because he's just not going to – right now he's just not cutting it. So, but moving on here, Atlanta, Chris. All right. You guys acquired like 83 guys at the deadline here. No, but really, they acquired a few bats here. Eddie Rosario from Cleveland, Adam Duvall from Miami, Jorge Soler from Kansas City, and also got Richard Rodriguez for bullpen help from the Pittsburgh Pirates. And the best hitter they gave up, or best player they gave up in general, outside of future Hall of Famer Pablo Sandoval, was Bryce Wilson. So got to be happy with that. What are your thoughts in general? There's a lot of moving pieces here. You guys needed these bats, though, with all the injuries you've had to deal with this year. So how do you see everything shaking out here, both in the bullpen with Rodriguez, who I assume is going to be more of the setup man for Will Smith, and how do you see that outfield shaking out too?
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic moves to give up virtually nothing for these guys. I mean, you look at the outfield that they had been trotting out there. It was just kind of a joke between Abraham Almonte, Adorizana, and Heredia. It was just a mess. Like, you know, where they were after having Acuna and Ozuna, Pache is supposed to be the three, and that all fell apart, obviously, for all different reasons. But now I foresee it. Adam Duvall probably in center. Like, that's kind of crazy, but he's not as bad of a defender as people give him credit for.
He's the best in the bunch.
Right. He's serviceable in center. You know, Jock might could play some center, but I see Jock over in left and Soler in right. So I see that's how it shake out. I mean, Eddie Rosario is injured right now. I'm not sure when he'll be back, but he's dealing with like an abdominal strain. So I guess like mid-August.
Do you think he's a bench guy when he comes back? Or do you see him maybe some sort of timeshare? What do you think there?
Probably a platoon. I just don't see him being fantasy relevant. Like, he makes the bench a lot better, and maybe platoon, but I don't even know if he platoons. So I just see him as a bench option. In the bullpen, I think you're right. I mean, Will Smith's been good. Like, from a number standpoint, like, Rodriguez has been better, but Smith is just the better pitcher. And they may go to some matchups. I mean, with Smith being a lefty and Rodriguez being a righty there, so it's highly possible they just play the matchups, and we'll see. But, you know, I don't see Rodriguez getting the bulk of the saves by any means. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But good moves overall, in my opinion, to get some help. I mean, this team, with how beat up they were, was not beating the Dodgers, not beating the Padres in the playoffs. But you put yourself in a position now where you can at least contend for the division, maybe, or the wild card, because that lineup was rough and they were still hanging in there by a thread. So, you know, right now, four games out, they can still do it. So lineup is much better looking than it was.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. And I like these moves here, especially for Duvall and Soler here. I think they're slight winners in this, and because they're gonna be hitting, so far Duvall has been hitting fifth both games, and Soler hit sixth yesterday. So that's hitting fifth and sixth, right behind, you know, the current big three of Ozzie Albies, Freddie Freeman, and Austin Riley, who are all having very good years. So a lot of RBI opportunities there for, you know, two players that really depend on their power and their run production. So I like this these moves for those two. But I don't know if I'm fully buying in. Like, Soler had that little mini hot streak where he had, like, what, six home runs in four games or whatever it was, and everyone's like, oh, he's back. And, you know, anybody that dropped him, including me and Michael Govier in our tag team league, we dropped him a couple weeks ago. We were kind of regretting it, but I think that's what he's always going to be, is just a streaky guy. He'll carry you for a week, then go into hibernation for a month. But Mindy, what are your thoughts on all these moves here? And are you buying back into Jorge Soler, or are you thinking it's just a hot streak as well?
Yeah, I mean, he has a great quality of contact, but he's a streaky player as well. I think that's just what he is. Like, you can ride him for a little while and then he'll go cold for a little bit. I don't think you can rely on what you saw in 2019 being the norm for him. So
right. He's
definitely somebody that I think, again, you see he's hit a home run in back-to-back games, and you go and you pick him up if he's a free agent. And then the moment when you see he's 0-4, 0-5 with 2 Ks in back-to-back or three straight games, like, drop him and you just do that as much as you can. Obviously, if you're in a league where you don't have to spend too much fab on him. As far as like Eddie Rosario, I don't want any part of, I don't know if you guys know what I did there, Eddie Rosario and Eddie Rosario. I don't want any part of Eddie Rosario right now as far on my fantasy team. I think that abdominal strain, abdominal intercostal strain, I see two different things when I've been reading reports about it. As far as I've seen, they said maybe the end of August, I think I saw. Like, they haven't really given a definitive timeline on that. And those type of things are really hard to come back from, especially with the amount of time in the season we have left. Maybe he comes back, but I don't expect him this season to be somebody that you can rely on down the stretch. So I'm not as bullish on Rosario, but I do think as far as the bullpen is concerned, I'm not worried. I think Will Smith is going to be the guy as long as he's effective, and he's been pretty good, I feel like, for the most of this season. I think Rodriguez just slides in there as an eighth inning guy, and that's how I would expect it shaken out.
Yeah, totally agree there. One last deal here before we hit the break. Texas Rangers sent Kyle Gibson and Ian Kennedy to the Philadelphia Phillies, and surprisingly in the return was Spencer Howard. I didn't think Philly was ready to move on from Spencer Howard. So a couple questions here for you gentlemen here. First off, are either of you buying what Gibson has done this year? I know I think he's been solid. I don't think he's going to be this good. I think giving up Howard for him I think that's going to hurt Philly in the long run, because, you know, they're going for it this year, and the NL East, as we've mentioned, hasn't been great. So, you know, most every team is still in it for the most part. But is Gibson and Ian Kennedy the pieces that are going to put you over the top? I don't think so. And I'm still very high on Spencer Howard. Like, I've written about it in articles and talked about it on here numerous times. Like, the arsenal and the command and control profile, he still screams number two starter to me long term, or maybe a high end three. And he's got the mid 90s fastball that he commands fairly well, the really good slider, really good changeup. So, three above average to plus offerings, mixing the curveball as well, which is pretty solid. I still think, even though his stats haven't been great, actually, they've been pretty bad at the major league level, outside of a few good starts here and there, I still am all in on Spencer Howard. I would be buying low on him just as much as I'm trying to buy low on Jesus Luzardo. Chris, I'll go to you first for Spencer Howard here. What are your thoughts on Howard? I know you're not quite as high on him as I am. I know I kind of think I've gotten that from our talking on our podcast over the last several months here, but what are your thoughts on Spencer Howard and Dynasty here?
Yeah, he was, at one point I was really high on him, and, you know, as a minor leaguer, he performed at a high level, and, you know, much like Luzardo, I still think there's plenty of talent there to be unlocked. I think he just needs a chance to pitch through the struggles, and Philadelphia hasn't really given him a fair shake to do that. So I'm hoping now in Texas, he'll have that chance to just work through things and work. You know, he'll refine his arsenal, I think, and the pitchability here. He's been really fastball heavy this year, and hopefully he kind of works on that. Again, he just turned 25. He's still young. I think he's definitely worth buying in on. But for Gibson, you know, I was already kind of fading him. Like, a lot of the underlying metrics say there's a lot of regression coming, and now he goes to by far the worst defensive team in baseball. Like, yeah, it's not even close. Like, Philadelphia has a defensive run saved minus 50 this year. Cincinnati is the next worst at minus 38. So it's not even close. And I don't know. You look at his Sierra of 4.46, his FIP of 3.75, which is actually lower than you think. And he's got a pretty low BABIP, pretty high strand rate. I think that kind of reverses his course a little bit. And also leaving Texas, which is one of the better pitcher parks. And I think that has a little effect too, because you look and his home run per nine, Gibson's that is, was really low in comparison to his last several years. So that could have a factor. And I don't know if he was good for the first half, and like, he helped your team significantly, but I think that regression is coming for him.
Yeah. Especially when it didn't, you know, he wasn't even drafted in a lot of leagues, or if it was, he was drafted late, or you were picking him up early in the year off the waiver wire. So yeah, definitely a great get there, but I agree. There's definitely some regression coming. You mentioned all the ERA indicators are lower. Like, his xERA is right around 3.7 as well, slightly below league average, meaning, you know, or I should say above league average, worse than league average. There we go. Walk rate, same thing with the K rate, 8.9 and 20.4 respectively. You know, just nothing there. He limits, you know, the one metric he really stands out in is his barrel rate, only 3.8% allowed. So he limits that pretty well. But outside of that, this looks like a mediocre pitcher that's gotten really lucky so far this year. Mendy, what are your thoughts? Where are you on Gibson? Where are you at on Howard and Dynasty? And also, do we think Ian Kennedy is the closer here, or is it probably, I think it's a timeshare with Suarez, but what are your thoughts on all that, Mendy?
So I do think first Ian Kennedy first, I do think he'll be the closer. I think him and Joe Girardi both were in New York at the same time. So I think he's very familiar with Ian Kennedy. I think he will give him the closer role. It's just my initial gut call on that. As far as Spencer Howard, I do think the one thing that people were talking about in Philly is that they kind of used him all over the place. They never gave him a consistent role. Like he started some, they used him out of the bullpen. They kind of used him as like, I think at some points, like a long reliever, like coming in like the seventh, eighth inning for like six guys. Like I think they just kind of use him all over the place and kind of that can mess with your head. I feel like if you're a young pitcher.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I do think him going to Texas to get a fresh start, a team that just acquired Dane Dunning from the White Sox last year. And he's kind of gotten a chance to grow some this year and be able to get some starts under his belt to get some consistency. I think it's going to be good for Spencer Howard. I think he's going to be able to do the same in Texas. They're going to be like, hey, we're a young team. We're not expected to win. Let's allow you to start, grow. Let's, you know, see where you're struggling and let's try to work with you rather than being in Philly where you have the pressure on you as the prospect, the number one prospect in that system and a team that's more of a win now team. So I think that's going to be great. If you can get him low, I would definitely buy low on Spencer Howard. As far as Kyle Gibson goes, I watched him a lot of times when he's with the Twins. He's a very, very average pitcher, not anywhere near, I think, what you saw the first half of the season. And his first year in Texas wasn't great either. He's got a 6.26 ERA in July, two of his last three outings getting completely obliterated. I think the big change people were pointing to was he introduced a cutter this year to have another glove side pitch. But I think at some point the rest of the league starts catching up with you. And I think they are starting to catch up with it. So if he doesn't make any more adjustments, I am very concerned. And like Chris mentioned, I didn't even know about the defensive runs save stat for Philly being that much worse than everybody else. So that obviously is not going to be great for him either. So I'm out on Kyle Gibson. If you can sell him, great. But at this point right now, people are definitely probably not giving you anything probably worth selling at this point with how bad he's looked.
Yeah, I think that defense, Wheeler has somehow been unaffected by it for the most part. But, you know, it's kind of gotten the NOLA a bit this year. He's had a, you know, semi-down year, at least for his level. So, yeah, definitely not great. And, you know, that ballpark has always been more of a hitter's ballpark than a pitcher's ballpark, too. So, and then Texas wasn't more of a pitcher's ballpark after being a hitter's ballpark for many years. So I think, yeah, defense down, ballpark down, everything's arrows just pointing down for Gibson. But so I think we're all kind of in agreement here, not buying Gibson, still buying Spencer Howard here. So a lot of good stuff there. Let's go ahead and hit a quick break. But we have like another 7 or 8 or 9 or 10. I don't know. A lot of more trades here to talk about here on the other side. So don't you go anywhere.
Want to create a breakthrough gene therapy? Pioneer aerospace excellence? Start a global hospitality brand? Be next to do it in Montgomery County, Maryland. Visit bnext.thinkmoco.com to see how our top talent, diversity, and location will help you be the next company to change the world.
All right, welcome back from the break. We got David Mendelson with us here from the Triple Play Fantasy Family, talking a lot of the trades that went down on the MLB trade deadline the other day. So let's get right back into it here. Let's get to some more relievers that changed hands here. And that's a great segue that I didn't even try to do. That was on accident. Brad Hand changed hands here from the Nats to the Toronto Blue Jays. They were trying to get some more bullpen help. And Daniel Hudson also went from the Nats to the San Diego Padres for right-hand pitching prospect Mason Thompson. Hand went for Riley Adams, a catching prospect. So let's go to you first here, Chris. Who do you think closes in both Toronto and Washington? And do you think this opens up a clear path to playing time for Alejandro Kirk? Because it looks like it did.
Well, last night, Romano got the save and Hand pitched the eighth. So that was quite interesting.
You think it's going to be the case here moving forward? Or do you think they play the matchups more?
I think they probably play the matchups, if I had to guess. So, again, the right-handed, left-handed situation. I bet they play the matchups. I mean, they got Joaquin Soria as well back in the bullpen. I mean, he seems like a clear setup guy. I don't think he's going to get any saves, but wouldn't surprise me if it's split, you know, between Hand and Romano. They just kind of play what they have. I mean, Romano's been good, so I think they kind of keep rolling with it, and we'll see. But don't be surprised if Romano gets more saves. That'll be really interesting. For Kirk, I think it has to. I mean, you still have Reese McGuire there. They still have a lot of catchers on the 40-man. But, you know, Danny Jansen's hurt. Hamstring injury. Not sure when he'll be back. So, naturally, I think Kirk should see more time. I mean, he's caught the last 2 days. So, hopefully, he does get the bulk of the share because he's a great hitter. And, I mean, pure hit tool, one of the better catchers in baseball. So I'd love to see Kirk get a run, and hopefully he does.
Yeah, I was really hoping that this would open up more of a chance here for Alejandro Kirk. And, you know, obviously when Danny Jansen, when is he coming? When's Danny Jansen coming back, Chris? You remember?
I don't know if there's a clear timetable, but he has a strained hamstring. Yeah, went on the 22nd of July.
Okay, yeah, those always seem to linger. Those hammies always seem to linger. So who knows? Maybe it's a season-ending thing. Who knows? But yeah, obviously Kirk is more intriguing than Reese McGuire. It looks like it's pretty much they've each gotten three starts here in the last six. So who knows? But Mendy, what are your thoughts on all this?
Do you guys know how Reese McGuire is defensively? I haven't looked it up, but the only thing I'm kind of curious as far as Kirk. I know Kirk isn't very good defensively. I know Kirk's an exceptional hitting catcher, but I'm wondering if down the stretch, if Toronto's lineup's already so loaded with offense, if they want a catcher that might be better defensively or better handles the pitching staff, because offense won't be a problem. They're going to need to make sure that they hammer down pitching, and that might maybe lose Kirk some playing time. Again, I don't know how good McGuire is defensively, but if he is a good defensive catcher and he calls games better, then that part does concern me if that's again the case. But I mean, yeah, Kirk's a hitting machine. So if I have Kirk, I'm definitely excited as of right now for that. As far as the, did you ask about the Nationals too?
Oh, not yet. We'll get to that after. What about Toronto? Do you think both Romano and Hand should still be, obviously Romano should still be, but do you think Hand, even if he's maybe getting a quarter of the saves or something like that, you think he's still fantasy relevant?
I think saves are so valuable. I think that even if he's getting a quarter of the saves on a team that's going to win a lot of games, continue to win a lot of games, I still think he's rosterable. And I agree with Clay. I think they're going to play a lot with a lefty and a righty. I think you're going to play a lot more matchups. So if I have him, I'm not necessarily dropping him.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Brad Hand, that is.
Yeah, agreed. And in Washington, it looks like Kyle Finnegan is going to get the closer role here because there's not really a lot of great options left in that pen. I added him to my waiver wire article as well. I'm not a big Finnegan guy. I think he's I think he's an okay reliever. I'll go that far. You look at the metrics this year, 3.21 ERA, decent enough, 1.45 whip, only a 25% K rate, which is not really that great for a reliever. Does have a decent little three pitch mix here, sinker, slider, splitter. It's that sinker he uses about 70% of the time. Both the slider and the splitter have been pretty solid this year. They've all been pretty solid offerings. So it looks like he's going to be the new guy here. Mendy, would you, for weekly fab type of leagues, how much would you think would you invest trying to get one of these guys, whether it be, a Finnegan or any of the other new closers we've talked about here? How would you prioritize these guys here?
The order I would put the players in of this group.
Yeah. Or the new closer with, the Miami situation with this one, all kind of the new ones we've talked about here. Which one are you going after? You can go after one of these new closers here that kind of have stepped into the role over the last couple of days because of trades. Who would you go after? Would it be Finnegan? Would it be, one of the Miami guys? Who would you go after?
I like Bender the best reliever out of this group. The only thing that's, again, scares me, we talked about, we don't know if he's going to be the closer. I think Finnegan has the most clear role right now out of these closers. But again, it depends if you believe in him. I mean, he's got a 25% K percentage. And the Nats have been running Tanner Rainey out there a lot, and just he's never worked out. They've wanted him to be the closer of the future, and it's never worked out. He's always blowing games. So I probably, if it's me, it's going to be situational. If I'm closer to the top of the standings and I'm doing okay in saves, then I'm going to take the better reliever, and I'm going to go for Bender. If I'm kind of trying to climb up the standing some and I need saves, I'm going to go for the guaranteed one, which is probably going to be Kyle Finnegan.
That's fair. Now moving on to the last, I swear, this is the last relievers we're going to talk about on this show. I know there's a lot of them. This is the last one, I promise. But arguably the biggest one that changed hands here, Craig Kimbrell went across town from the Cubs to the White Sox, which creates a very interesting back into that bullpen. It's a very good back into the bullpen they have in the south side here. And Nick Madrigal went back, which was kind of shocking. Didn't think Nick Madrigal would go back in that deal. I'm still a Madrigal guy. I know he doesn't have the power, but I think he can be high average, high speed type of guy. Good option to lead off for them, along with, I think, nice little 1-2 there, him and Nico Horner. I know it's like, you know, star-studded by any means, but both high contact guys that can get on base. So I think that could be their 1-2, at least moving forward here until they get some of their top hitting prospects up. And then in the back of that bullpen now, who's the closer? Like, is it, you know, you got two of the top probably 10 closers this year with Liam Hendricks and Craig Kimbrell. Chris, who's getting that role? Do you think it's a timeshare, or do you think Kimbrell gets it? What do you think?
It's going to be weird. I mean, they say they're going to split it, but after that contract you signed Hendricks to this past year, like, I don't think you're going to piss him off, right?
Like, right? Yeah, you got to think it's still at least like mostly Hendricks.
Yeah, because you assume, like, I think Kimbrell's got a player option, but I bet that he hits the open market. So, I don't know. I assume you have to give it to Hendricks, especially with that money that you gave him. Like, you're paying him to be the closer, and he's been a good closer. And, I mean, like you said, they've both, Hendricks and Kimbrell, have been two of the best in the game. So, it makes it tough, but I don't know. I struggle to think that Kimbrell just unseats him like that. You know, a guy that's been elite all season, you just bring in Kimbrell just to shake it up. Like, I feel like that messes with Hendricks' confidence some. But, you know, Kimbrell's only really been a closer his whole career also. So, I don't know. It's a weird situation. I don't particularly like it, especially because I have a lot of Hendricks on a lot of teams.
So. I do too, man.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You'll have to watch it and monitor it closely. But, you know, I just feel like that Hendricks probably deserves it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But you mentioned Kimbrell has never really been a setup man. He's been closer outside of the times where he was like really, really struggling a few years ago. They demoted him temporarily to, you know, kind of get his head right. He's been, you know, a pretty good closer for a long, long time now, at least a decade, since he kind of came up with your Braves back in like, what, 07, 08 or so, somewhere back in that range. So, yeah, that's definitely interesting. And, you know, I should mention also that they also brought in from the Cubs, Ryan Tepera, who's been a very good reliever as well. Obviously, he won't factor in, but just look at that bullpen. Liam Hendricks, Craig Kimbrell, Tepera, Michael Kopech, Aaron Bummer, Garrett Crochet. So many good arms there. It's just an embarrassment of riches. I wish my Red Sox could get a few more. Even though our Red Sox bullpens are pretty damn good this year, but I was hoping that we'd get some more bullpen help outside of Hansel Robles. But Mendy, what are your thoughts here? Do you think, you know, end of the season, from here on out, last 2 months of the season, who do you think gets more saves, Hendricks or Craig Kimbrell?
I think you guys touched on all the points I was going to say. I think Hendricks is going to be the guy. And I think, you know, Clegg mentioned the fact that it's confidence. Like, if you take somebody who's been very good and is on a high contract, and all of a sudden you're like, you know what, you're pitching the eighth. You got to worry about his confidence. You got to worry about, you know, how it's going to, he's going to, you know, react to the rest of the team. Like, that's not going to, you know, you have a new guy coming in, unseating a guy that doesn't deserve to have his job lost. That doesn't, I don't think that would sit well with the locker room and everything that they've kind of developed there. Or at least I know LaRusso is not great, but I think among players, that wouldn't be exactly what they'd want to hear. So I think what's going to happen is Hendricks is going to get the majority of saves, but there will be those days where Hendricks has pitched two straight days and then Kimbrell will come in and get a save on that third day. You know, yeah. Hendricks doesn't pitch. So I do think Kimbrell will get some saves, but I think when they're at their best and everybody's available, it will be Kimbrell Hendricks. And I would be shocked if it's anything different.
Yep. I agree with that. Yeah. I say it's probably like 2/3 to 1/3 Hendricks rest of the way. Obviously both, you know, obviously you're not going to drop Craig Kimbrell here because he, you know, the elite ratios he's had this year, the elite strikeouts, he'll still get some saves here. And like you mentioned, Mendy earlier, you know, all saves are valuable. Mm-hmm. So definitely no one's dropping Craig Kimbrell right now. But yeah, that was a very interesting deal to get Madrigal back there in the White Sox. Are you a Madrigal guy, Mendy? I know it's like everyone's split on Madrigal because, you know, some just don't like the power, lack of power, I should say. There's like, oh, he's a high contact, high speed guy. I like that. That's still valuable. What are your thoughts real quick on Nick Madrigal?
I mean, it's been said he's the best contact hitter in baseball. And anytime you're the best at baseball at something, you're obviously going to be intriguing to me. I don't think he's one of those guys that I'm like overspending or overpaying for with this move. I'm like, oh, I want to get Nick Madrigal on my team. But if I have him, I'm okay. Like, I'm not, you know, I think he is who he is. And again, he's going to help you in batting average. If you're in a points league and you have him, he's not going to K. So he's not going to give you a lot of negative points. And do you guys see the meme with him and Nico Horner? It's like the Spider-Man meme with them pointing to each other.
Yep. That was great.
I think the Cubs having them at the top of the lineup, both of them, great guys to get on base. And then if you know, they're building things the right way in Chicago with all these trades. They're bringing in some good guys. And I think if you're a Cubs fan, you have to be, I know it's tough losing all the guys that you lost, but I do like Madrigal and I do like all the prospects they were bringing in from the trades they were making.
Yeah, imagine being a Cubs fan and losing like what, four of your top six players. You gotta throw like Contreras and Kyle Hendricks into that mix too. But yeah, that must be tough. But let's stick with the Cubs though, because like I mentioned, they traded away all of their good players here. Already touched on Kimbrel. Let's move over to the big three hitters that they lost here. Starting with Javier Baez going to the Mets for Pete Crow Armstrong, who we will talk about all the prospects on our second part of this. So we'll hit on PCA there. But Baez, way up and down season here. I still think it's a good get for the Mets, you know, both offensively and defensively, because they've kind of been struggling offensively as well. And Mendy, where are you at on Baez? Do you think this helps him? Neutral? What do you think on Baez going to the Mets here?
Yeah, I think I'll keep it short. I think it definitely helps him. I think you have the one, he's in a better lineup. Two, Francisco Lindor and him are really, really close. And I think when you have somebody you're that close with that is in the locker room with you, I think most of the time it's always going to help boost your play. He's in an offense again that he's going to be able to steal bases. He's going to, the Mets are in first place in the National League East. So, you know, sometimes I feel like if you're playing on a losing team, you're not necessarily going to be as motivated, or you may swing and chase it. And he's obviously going to chase it a lot of pitches regardless, but you're going to be pressing a little bit more. I think if you're playing for a winning team, you have a good lineup around you. I think that sometimes can help fix all the things that have been going wrong with that he usually does. So I'm excited for him. If I have Javi Baez, I would expect this is going to be an upgrade for him.
Chris, would you agree with that?
I don't know. It's interesting. He gets so much hype and he's a sub 300 OBP guy. You know, his career is 303. He hasn't had an OBP over 300 since 2019. I mean, 238 last year, 292 this year. Yeah, the power speed's intriguing. Fielding's good. You bring up the aspect of the mental aspect of being with, you know, him and Lindor being really close friends. I think that plays in a lot, but I don't know. The K rate, the contact rates, like they're among the worst hitters on the Mets already. So it'll be interesting. I was trying to find it, but I'd seen a tweet that I think he had one of the worst qualified K rates among all Mets hitters and like the worst OBP. So it's interesting. I don't really know, but I think he does help the lineup. It's impossible not to, but yeah, it's just, I don't love Baez like personally. I just don't think he's like, I think he's overhyped. Mm. But I give up too. PCA.
He's been a hard one for me to rank because, right, yeah, PCA, that was another one. Like there was a few trades where obviously you see, you know, the big name come through first, like the Baez come through or the Berrios, etc. But then you see like the return, you're like, wow, like there was a few that of the returns that really shocked me that like, oh, wow, they got that prospect. Mostly it was obviously prospect hauls. And then PCA was one, even though he's injured, you know, very, you know, easy top 100 guy. One of the top Mets prospects. Again, we'll get into him in the next episode here. But yeah, so right now, Baez will play shortstop until Lindor returns and then likely move over to second base and then McNeil over to third. That's how I see that. I don't see any other way that. Then you got JD Davis. So, like, who's the loser here? There's got to be a loser in this whole situation with the Mets. Who's that? Who is that loser? Is it McNeil? Is it Davis? Is it both? It's probably a timeshare. What do you guys think?
Probably both.
Yeah. I think. Conforto hasn't been good either. I mean, at this point right now, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he loses some at bats too. I'm speaking of like talked about just dropping him in a points league I have with him. I mean, yeah. In a dynasty or anything, you're not dropping him, but like any type of redraft league, I think he's going to be in the mix. Having and if he doesn't turn it around, I mean, JD Davis has been playing decently. So, I mean,
yeah, he's been hitting the ball well.
Yeah. So, like, you can't. at this point, you have to look at who's not performing. And Conforto, I mean, Nimmo has been someone at the top of their lineup that they've been loving at the top of their lineup. I know he's been considered a platoon player in the past, but yeah, I think Conforto definitely gets in the mix there as far as losing out some time.
I mean, in general, I agree with that, but I feel like the Mets just love Conforto too. It's like he hasn't lost like any playing time, even through his struggles here. Like he's started the last six games in right field. I do think once you do get Lindor back and you have to do all this shuffling, I do think he'll, you know, probably against, you know, a tough lefty or something like that, they might sit Conforto. I don't know. McNeil hasn't been great either, but you know, if you take him out of that two hole, who else you put? I guess you could put Lindor up in the two hole. I don't know. It's just this Mets team is kind of like really a lot of different profiles here. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. I was hoping JD Davis would get consistent playing time, and he kind of is right now. He started four of the last six games. It's two on, one off, two on, one off. But he's been sitting mostly against righties. But you know, his quality of contact measures are very good. So I'm hoping that Davis doesn't take a huge hit here, and he's still in there like two-thirds of the time, enough to have some fantasy value here. But yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Michael Conforto versus lefties is hitting 121 this year.
Yeah, that's not good. What is he against righties? They can't be much better because he's like he's not good overall.
It's a 233 versus righties, which isn't great, but it's a at least
better, yeah,
but to average this year for the majors.
I think he's still like dealing with some injuries here. He just hasn't looked right the entire year. So I think at this point, like Conforto. Yeah, you mentioned, Mendy, you were debating dropping him in redraft. I think that's fine. I think this is going to be one of those where like, he's just not going to be right the rest of the year. He might show you like a few flashes of a few games where he'll hit a couple bombs or something like that. But I think it's going to take until, you know, full offseason in the 2022 until we see Conforto back to being, you know, the Conforto that, you know, we know. But moving on here, next one, Chris Bryant went to the San Francisco Giants for Alexander Canario and Caleb Killian to pretty solid prospects from that system. Chris, you know, Bryant's been really up and down this year, big hot stretch. Now he's been cooling off lately. What are your thoughts on Bryant going to San Fran here, and how do you value him rest of the season?
It's interesting. I mean, they had to move him like after trading everybody else. Like they couldn't just left him on that roster. It'd been really, really awkward. Park factors are overall similar. I mean, you look, it's like a average park factor for both teams. So actually Oracle's one of the worst for home runs, but in just a general standpoint, like Oracle and Wrigley are fairly similar. So the home runs, it'd be interesting to see how that does play out for Bryant. But yeah, like you mentioned, it's been up and down, like really, really hot at times and, you know, just not as great other times, but still a high OBP type guy, shown solid power. I think it's a solid move. And for fantasy, I don't think it's too much of a difference in value. It could go, I mean, maybe a slight drop, but you know, Bryant's one of those players where maybe he is a little more motivated now. Cause I think that he knew this was coming like all along. Like I just have to wonder, like him and Rizzo both were like the last month just kind of like dreading this, like been with Chicago for a long time. You know, Bryant obviously drafted by Chicago and they were sitting on this knowing that the time was coming where they were going to be leaving this city where they had been for so many years, won a championship. And now maybe he's has his mind off of it. He can just focus on baseball. And the Giants are a competitive team, which obviously they lead the NL West over the Dodgers and the Padres. So there's an incentive to play like and play at your best. So he's definitely got a chance to do something special. Like if they win that division, that would be absolutely incredible. And, you know, maybe that's what it takes, just a little motivation for him to get going. So we'll see how it all shakes out. Hopefully he stays injury free, but I like the move in general.
Mendy, what are your thoughts? Are you buying Chris Bryant rest of the year?
I am. Well, I'll start out first. You look at his batting average by month and you see that he obviously started out the gates really hot with a 322, then 327 in May, 114 in June, but back up to 290 in July. Obviously, at that 114 month, I think, you know, you obviously talk about he's being hurt and not quite himself during that time period. You go to the San Francisco Giants, who have been, for what we talked about Miami with pitchers, they've been doing that with hitters. They've been Evan Longoria and you know, the list can go on and on, all the guys that they've been making them kind of have bounce back hitting seasons here. So I really like Evan Longoria there. The last thing I will say also is Chris Bryant in for his career in San Francisco is a 324 hitter. So there's that aspect as well. I think he hits well in San Francisco. So I'm definitely buying him for sure.
Yeah, I am. I think I am as well. No, it does feel like there's always something going on with Chris Bryant. Like there's always some like nagging injury, shoulder, knee, whatever. Usually up, he's had some shoulder issues. So usually it's a shoulder, but I think there's always something that's just keeping him from being like full 100% healthy. So I don't know. I still think that Bryant's name value carries more weight than his actual production value. And not saying he's not, you know, not a good hitter anymore. He's still a very good hitter and all, but I might still look to trade him in Dynasty if I could, because I think he'll still get you a pretty solid return. And for those that are worried about like how does this affect Longoria when he returns, because he's had a pretty good year, even though he's been out for the last nearly 2 months now with a sprained shoulder. Yeah, I think he'll be fine. I think because Bryant has played first, he can play outfield. So I think Longoria will take it back over at third when he's back. And then Bryant probably moves over to first, I think. You know, obviously outfield is an option too, like I said. So I don't think it's going to hurt Longoria at all when he comes back. But moving on to the other two deals here. The last deal that the Cubs made, we're going to group this together with another deal because they're both left-handed power bats going to the Yankees. I hated the Yankees getting these two guys because I wanted one of them in Boston. We did get Schwarber, who we'll talk about in a little bit here, but Yankees got both Joey Gallo and Anthony Rizzo at the deadline, give up a ton of prospects, but none of like their top six or seven went anywhere. They traded away right-hander Alexander Vizcaino and outfielder Kevin Alcantara in the Rizzo deal and gave up the quartet of Ezekiel Duran, second base prospect, Josh Smith, a shortstop prospect, Trevor Halver, kind of a utility prospect, to play some second, play some outfield, and then right-hander Glenn Otto, who is having a pretty solid season at the double-A level. So no big names went out of New York, but they get Rizzo and Gallo, and of course, left-handed power hitters. Going to Yankee Stadium is always a boost. Let's look at the expected home runs this year for both Gallo and Rizzo. So Gallo right now, 25 home runs. Yankee Stadium would have been 29. Nice little boost there. But Rizzo is the real intriguing one. Rizzo, 15 home runs in the year. Already cranked his first with the Yankees the other night. If he had been playing in Yankee Stadium, he would have 24 home runs. That's a huge, huge jump there. That's a 60% jump up to 24 home runs. So you got to think the value of these two goes up. But at the same time, what happens with Luke Voit when Luke Voit comes back, which should be any day now from what I've heard? You know, they were trying to get rid of him, didn't get much bites, which is not overly surprising, but Voit's a good power bat too. And selfishly, I have some shares of Voit, so I'm hoping he plays somehow, some way, but I don't see it. Chris, how do you see this shaking out? Do you see Voit getting any sort of at-bats when he comes back? Obviously we can't rely on, you know, Stanton to stay healthy longer than a week, but you know, How do you see this playing out? And do you think Voit still has value rest of the year?
Probably not rest of the season. I just don't know where they put him. I mean, I don't know if he's played anywhere else in his career other than first base. And I mean, there's not a clear spot for him in the designated hitter spot either, in my opinion. So I don't really know. It'll be interesting. I mean, unless they want to trot out Stanton in one of the corner spots, but if Judge playing center, I mean, I know he played center last night, but it'll be interesting. Maybe he does get some DH reps, but I don't see Judge playing center field every day the rest of the season. So I don't see Rizzo playing anywhere but first. There's no spot for Voit, honestly. He may play 3 days a week, but yeah, that kills his value.
Yeah, he's almost needs a Stanton injury, like I said, which is, you know, not asking for much here, but and a lot of these Yankees have had injury issues. You know, Judge has had his, Gallo's had his, DJ LeMahieu's had his. So, you know, I guess it could, you know, maybe won't be too long before he gets back in there every day. But can one of them play third? Like Gio Urshela has been like meh this year. So it'd be nice if one of them could play third, but I don't see them, anybody going over to third. But Mendy, what are your thoughts here? Do you like, obviously you have to like these moves going to the Yankees, right?
Yeah. I mean, their value is obviously greater. The only part that worries me about Joey Gallo is hopefully Yankees fans know what they're getting. And you never know the pressure of going to New York with a guy that strikes out as much as Joey Gallo is, that that gets in his head. If he starts reading like the headlines in Texas, that's okay because you're their best player, right, and they know it. But the Yankees, they might not accept that. At least the fans might even. So that's the only thing that kind of concerns me as far as Gallo. But I've read all Joey Gallo can play center too. He's actually a pretty decent center fielder. Not like incredible.
He's a solid. Like, people were like, especially around here up in my neck of the woods in Maine, they're like, oh, the Yankees defense, outfield defense is going to suck now. I'm like, not really. You know, Judge is solid defensively. Gallo is solid defensively. It's not great, but it's not bad either.
Gallo played center in Texas.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then you also, again, you guys already brought up, the Yankees get hurt all the time. And if they're going to have to play stand-in in left field, which it sounds like they're going to have to, then he's probably going to get hurt at some point. And I mean, it's just going to be a matter of maybe a week before I feel like, oh, you know, Judge has a leg cramp and is going to sit the next 3 or 4 days and reevaluate. And then he goes on the IL. And it's like, you know, I think that's going to one of those situations where it's going to solve itself. And so if you have Luke Voit, obviously it looks kind of glim now, but I would say that again, I would just expect there's going to most likely be an injury that's going to open up a spot for him.
So would you hold on to him for now just until you see things, you know, shake out and see if there's any injuries over the next week or so?
I would give it 2 weeks and see if anything happens. And after a few weeks, then I might reevaluate. But I would not be shocked in the next week or two that there's something that happens that gives him an everyday bat again in the lineup.
Chris, would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Like, I never wish injury on anybody, but I got a few Luke Voit shares coming back, so I'm hoping he gets back in the lineup here fairly soon. I don't really have any of – I think I have one Judge share, maybe one Stanton share, but I have none of Gallo. Never been a big Gallo guy, but obviously love his power with that short porch. I think I could at least – like, I think I personally could run into like 10 home runs in Yankee Stadium with that short – I'm kidding, obviously. Though I can bat lefty, so you never know. Moving on here, a couple more big deals in the American League East before we get to the biggest deal that went down in the trade deadline this year. Jose Berríos went from the Minnesota Twins to the Toronto Blue Jays. They really, really were looking for an arm. They got that arm, but they paid up to get him. This is another one. This probably was the most shocking return. At first, you saw, all right, they got right-hander Simeon Woods Richardson, you know, top 100 caliber prospect, top 20 or so pitching prospect in the game. One that I got eyes on earlier this year looks pretty damn good. I think he's a good number three starter long term. Like, all right, that's a solid return. You think there'd be some smaller pieces added in, obviously. And then, like, a few minutes later, it's like, oh, they're getting Austin Martin too. I'm like, whoa. Like, and I'm not like the biggest Austin Martin guy, but they got two top, you know, they got one top 30 to 40 prospect, another top like 75 to 80 guy for Berríos. So great return there. Mendy, do you think the move to the AL East hurts? Obviously he's got a better team around him, so better chance for wins, but you know, obviously the all the ballparks in the AL East are primarily hitters ballparks, including the one he'll play his home games in. So do you think that cancels each other out, or do you think this is a negative for Jose Berríos moving forward here?
If you have Jose Berríos, sell. I do not want to hear you guys holding on to Jose Berríos. And if he's a baller, I will definitely swallow my microphone on that and take a break from Twitter and everything for a little bit. I looked this stat up today. Jose Berríos against the American League East in his career. 6-0, 2.94 ERA against Baltimore. That's great, obviously, but most teams can beat up on Baltimore.
Yeah, it's Baltimore, yeah.
So against Boston, 0-5 with a 4.93 ERA. Against the Yankees, 1-2 with a 5.79 ERA. Against Tampa Bay in four starts, 0-2 with a 7.15 ERA. So against the rest of the division opponents besides Baltimore, he's absolute trash. And keep in mind, at the end of the season, at the end of your fantasy season, a lot of divisional games go on, because they want those divisional races to come down to at the end of the season. So there's going to be a lot of division games, and you see what he does against that division. I know he's got the Toronto offense backing him, but I don't think he's going to be in the game long enough to qualify for wins with what I've seen from him. And if you look also, Twins, again, have a great ballpark for the most part as far as a spacious ballpark. You look at his xFIP over the last few years, 3.89 in 2018, 4.32 in 2019, 4.28 in 2020. I know he's been a little bit better this year. His xFIP is mid threes, but I expect it to bump up a little, like a half a run. So I think he's going to be very average, and I don't think you expect very average from him. So if you can sell him right now, you got to sell him.
To be honest, I've always thought that Berríos has always been a bit overrated. He's been a solid, he's been a pretty good arm. I'll give him pretty good. But you look and the way he's been valued every year, like, you know, an SP2 level in draft season and kind of the same thing in dynasty leagues, I just don't see the production ever being there. Like, he's been, you know, ERAs in his five full seasons, 389, 384, 368, 4, 348 this year. This has been his best ERA, and it's still right around 3.5, which in this day and age, 3.5 is like the new 4, you know, compared to what it was like 5, 10 years ago. He's never been a huge K rate guy. He's right around a K per inning for his career, which again, this day and age isn't that impressive. It's okay, but it's not that what you'd expect from your number two fantasy arm. You'd want someone that's like pushing 30% K rate. He's just not that guy. So I think he's always been a bit overrated, and then moving, like you mentioned, Mendy, how he's performed in the AL East against, you know, the other three big teams here, you know, Baltimore's whatever, but, and all the, like I mentioned, the hitters, ballparks, the environment. So yeah, I think this is definitely a down for him and for Dynasty as well, because he is going to be there. He's ARB eligible after for next year. He's a free agent in 2023. So he's there for another year and a half or so. You got to imagine they try to lock him up long-term. We'll see. But you got to figure they do with what they gave up to get him. But I think, yeah, the arrow right now for Berríos is definitely pointing down. Chris, what are your thoughts on Berríos here?
Yeah, I think he's just a little overrated. I think he's like a back-end SP3 for fantasy purposes. And, you know, maybe his chances of getting wins goes up in Toronto. But I don't know. Y'all brought up all valid points. I think that it's probably a slight tick down in value. So if you can sell him and get something, if people just look at the surface stats and say, oh, he's going to a great team where he'll have good, you know, run support and that sort of stuff, you may can cash in and get something good for him. And so I like him. I just don't love him. So I think that y'all bring up good points, brought up good stats. I think it's reasonable to go out and sell them.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think, yeah, like I said, arrow definitely pointing down on Berríos here. The other one real quick before we get to the big one, Kyle Schwarber went from the Washington Nationals to the my Boston Red Sox in the Nationals fire sale here. We give up right-hander Aldo Ramirez, who is decent pitching prospect, but nothing I think we're going to, you know, regret trading long-term. Schwarber is Schwarber. Now he kind of, we've kind of gone over this same type of player before. Great power, kind of streaky. I don't think that's going to change. I think slight increase for his value because of the Red Sox lineup. But then again, he did have Soto and Trey Turner around him in Washington. So I don't think it's a big value change for Schwarber. But I think the bigger thing that we got to look at here is who the heck is around Juan Soto now? It's like Juan Soto and a bunch of misfits. Like, sorry to everybody else in that lineup. I'm not trying to insult you, but I think Soto takes the biggest hit here. Obviously, he's still going to be arguably the best pure hitter in the game, and he's been on fire for the last month and a half or so, but there's nobody around him, so I think he's going to get a lot more intentional walks. I think this is a hit on Soto. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's tough, and obviously Soto being one of the best hitters in the game, he's really coming to his own the last couple weeks since the All-Star break, and you know, he mentioned that the home run derby would be good to help his launch angle out, and he's done that. I mean, he's absolutely mashed the ball this second half, hitting 400 with 7 home runs. That's obviously encouraging, but now I just think that, one, you have no one around you, you have no motivation to play, and you're not going to put up the counting stats. Like, that lineup is putrid. It just not good at all. So I just wonder what kind of motivation he has at this point. It's tough. I mean, you still imagine that he's going to mash the ball because that's what he does. He's still young, but I don't know. It's definitely discouraging from a pure value standpoint for Soto for, you know, probably the next couple years. Cause I don't really see them going out and making a big move. If they're not willing to keep Turner for next season, then
right.
I don't see them going out and building that lineup up for next season either.
It's so annoying because they have money. It's not like, right. It's not like this is like a small market, like the Rays, Pittsburgh, Kansas City. This is a team that has the money. So the fact that, you know, this was their starting lineup yesterday. Obviously, they had Juan Soto in the 3-hole. In front of him, Andrew Stevenson and Alkides Escobar. Okay, I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. Behind him, Josh Bell. Meh. You know, some people are big Josh Bell people. I'm not, so, but I guess he's okay. And then Luis Garcia, Trace Barrera, Carter Kieboom's back. Gerardo Parra is still there. Baby Shark. It's like, yeah, like the next best hitter in that lineup is Josh Bell, who I'm just not a fan of. So, yeah, as everyone knows, I am one of the biggest Soto supporters around, and I'm very sad. So while I go cry myself to sleep, Mendy, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm looking at that box score too, and then they're playing the Cubs, another team that gave up all their players. Right. So look at both sides of the box score, and you're like, who? I forgot he was still in the league, like stuff like that. So it's, I'm if I have Juan Soto in a dynasty league, I'm a little nervous right now. He's a great player, but I mean, if you have one true threat in an entire lineup, I mean, they don't have to pitch to him. So I'm very nervous right now. I mean, he's so great that he'll probably still be like a solid player. I got to ask you guys, I turn it to you. Where are you drafting Juan Soto next year?
In redraft,
where are you taking Juan Soto? At what point are you comfortable drafting him if this team is the same exact around him?
So assuming let's assume that Acuna should be back by the start of the season, right, Chris?
I think they said he was going to miss only a couple weeks, right? Maybe
that's the plan. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's assume for the sake of this that he's back opening day and not missing time. I think people I would take ahead of Soto in redraft: Acuna, Tatis. If it's dual eligibility and daily leagues, I would take Otani. So that puts Soto at 4. I don't know. Vlad comes in the mix there. Bichette, Turner, you know, obviously some pitchers, but I don't take a pitcher that high personally. So I would say 5th is a good spot for him.
Still, I'll take Vladdy, Trey, second base Trey, like, come on, yeah. Trey's elite and second base eligibility.
You might have outfield too, potentially too.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, like, we talk about how the counting stats will go down. They will, but I think he gets on base enough and he's just so good. I think they'll still be pretty good counting stats, just not like elite counting stats. Like, let's say, like, not a 240 runs plus RBI pace, more like, I don't know, 200. So, yeah, it'll be a drop, but I don't think he's going to be down to like a 80 RBI, 70 run scored pace. He's just too good for that. He gets on base too much for that. So, yeah, it's going to hurt, but I still think he's top 5. But, yeah, he's definitely in that mix with, you know, the guys, you know, mentioning Trey Turner and maybe some pitchers get into that mix. Vladdy, I think, will be a popular pick to go like 4th or so next year, especially if he continues what he's done for the first, you know, 2/3 of the season. So, yeah, I know it sucks. Can they get rid of him too? Just trade him to some team that would appreciate him. I know he has a ring already, and that's more than Mike Trout can say, but I hope this doesn't turn into like Mike Trout 2.0, where they just waste the next like handful of years of Juan Soto with nobody around him. Because it's not like they got this farm system that's coming up either. Their farm system is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've done, you know, a decent job restocking it here. You know, they did well in the draft, and they did, you know, got some good pieces back and some trades here, but still, it's still a bottom 5 farm system, and none of these guys are really like on the cusp of coming up. They're a couple years away. So yeah, sucks if you're Soto, someone you roster Soto, but keep the faith. He'll be okay. This hopefully Washington comes to their senses and get some pieces around him. But let's get to our last deal here. The big one that went down, obviously Max Scherzer and Trey Turner went to the Dodgers for the return package of Josiah Gray, Keibert Ruiz, Gerardo Carrillo, there's so many R's in that name, it really messes me up, and Donovan Casey, so two big prospects there, Gray and Ruiz. We'll get to Ruiz, because he's very interesting. We'll get to him in the next show. Same thing with Josiah Gray, but Trey Turner, second base eligibility, heck yeah. Mendy, how exciting is that?
Oh, I mean, gosh, we were just talking about him and talking about where we're going to take him next year. If they play him in the outfield too, and he gets second base, shortstop, and outfield eligibility, he's going to be at the top of the best lineup in baseball.
That's insane. Just
inject it in my veins. Like,
I know, right? It's insane.
Yeah, like I love it. Like, I mean, gosh. I mean, he's going to be a freaking baller there. He's a baller in Washington. He's going to be as much a baller in Dodgers. If you have him, you are ecstatic. Is Mookie Betts still out right now? Actually, I haven't checked. Is he?
He is.
I think he can't come back until, I think it's like sometime in the middle of next week, because The way it worked out, they couldn't like retroactive it. So it's, yeah, it's like middle of next week, he'll be back.
So, I mean, he'll have a few games too, where he'll hit leadoff and be able to, you know, steal some bases up top of that lineup. I guess when Mookie comes back, he hits number two. And I think Mookie's a pretty patient hitter as well. So that'll still allow Trey to be able to go and steal bases. It's not like Mookie's going to be swinging happy when he gets at the second spot. I just absolutely love it for Trey Turner. He's now, I know Chris kind of touched on it, I think he's a bona fide top five pick for fantasy for any kind of roto league next year.
Yeah, like I think I would agree with that. Especially if he gets that three position eligibility like you mentioned. And yeah, once Mookie comes back, like this lineup is going to be insane. Like they'll probably have, you know, at the top, some combination of Trey Turner and Mookie. And then behind those two, you'll have Max Muncy, Justin Turner, Corey Seager just returned, Will Smith. You know, Bellinger's probably gonna hit like seventh. He hit seventh yesterday, and that's without Mookie Betts back in the lineup. So you gotta figure he'll probably stay low, but that lineup is just stupid good. Like video game lineup when you can just make trades and at will. But then the second question here, I'll pop it over to you for this, Chris. There's going to be a roster crunch here. Not everybody can start. It probably means that either, I'm assuming AJ Pollock or Chris Taylor lose some time here moving forward. You know, I have more Taylor shares, and I know I just got Taylor from you in relegation. So I'm really selfishly hoping that Chris Taylor still plays at least close every day. And I think his versatility will keep him in the lineup. So do you think long term here, or at least rest of the season, that Pollock is the guy that kind of hurts the most?
Possibly, but he's been playing every single day, so
he's been doing pretty well too. It's like they're gonna have to, someone that's playing well is gonna have to lose some time. I don't think, even with how much Bellinger has been struggling, I can't imagine they sit Bellinger.
I don't think so.
More than the off, you know, off day here and there.
No, I don't think so. I mean, obviously this kills McKinstry, it kills Lux, Pujols, if anyone happened to roster him in any leagues.
Hey.
I know it's your
boy. That's my boy. That's my boy. All my friends here in Maine or New England area that are listening, they know they've given me, you know, given me a lot of crap because how bad he's been, but he's still my boy. He has a special place in my heart. So there'll be no Pujols slander on this podcast, Mr. Clegg. None.
Yeah. I mean, Billy McKinney's played the last 6 days for him, but obviously that changes when Mookie comes back. So I don't know. Somebody's got to be the odd man out, and probably Chris Taylor is the low man. I mean, between Muncy, Turner, Seager, Taylor's probably the low man there. Probably Taylor and Pollock, but you know they've both been performing well. So you just kind of throw your hands up and wonder. But the Dodgers, this is what they like to do. So we'll see. Yep. But I think it does mean that we'll see some Trey Turner at second. We'll see some Trey Turner in the outfield. I think we'll see him all over. So that'll be a lot of fun.
And I think if you have Chris Taylor, I would hold on to him, obviously right now, but even when Mookie's back, because I still think Taylor plays a decent amount. Like I think Dodgers know they're going to be in the playoffs in some capacity, whether it's a wild card or they end up catching the Giants for the division, who I think they're three back right now. So they're a postseason team, obviously. So I think they're going to want to keep, you know, their stars fresh. I think they'll give, you know, they can put Taylor at second. They can put Taylor in left, center, short, keep all their big studs fresh. And especially Corey Seager coming off injury. You know, Turner's had his injuries in the past. Mookie's dealing with some stuff this year. So I think they'll still use Taylor quite a bit. So I think he's still going to be fantasy relevant here. But that's very interesting how it's going to shake out. But yeah, I think the biggest loser, at least for the short term, Gavin Lux. Now, Chris, he's been a popular, you know, topic on our show here. And, you know, people asking us questions on Twitter. Where are you at on Lux right now? I'm still a believer. And like we've mentioned, how it's kind of like the Kyle Tucker syndrome here. So I'm still buying Lux, but obviously he's done, you know, for this year for value wise. But would you still go out there and buy Lux if you could?
I think so. I mean, the talent level's there. There's no denying what he did, you know, in 2019 when he really came into his own and performed at a crazy high level in double and triple A. I mean, he's got the hit tool. I think he's got the power. He's even got a little speed. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of frustrating. It was a playing time thing. This year, it wasn't a playing time thing. He just struggled. So he's one that gets traded. Like, I'm surprised he didn't get traded. Like, he seemed like a natural piece to go to Washington,
right?
Which actually would have been fantastic for him, right. I think. But
for Soto, too.
I'd take,
even though Lux has been struggling, I take him over. You know, who are they starting at second and short now? Well, Alkides Escobar and Luis Garcia.
Yeah.
I'll take Lux over that, even with his struggles.
I really hope they send Lux to AAA just to work things out, get his head right. Like, that's a big thing, just trying to get his head straight. I think it's a lot of mental aspect at this point, and I do think he bounces back. So it's hard to say when, but, yeah, I mean, yeah, the cost might never be lower, so I'm willing to go in on it.
Is he still top 100 Dynasty for you?
Nah, he's outside now, but it's tough. But the talent level's there to be a top 50, in my opinion.
Yep, agreed. Mendy, what are your thoughts on Lux?
Yeah, I mean, you see what he's done in AAA. It's like insane, his numbers. And then he just can't seem to get it right at the major league level, and he's really struggled against same-sided pitching. Like, he just can't hit it, and I'm just – if I have Gavin Lux, I'm hoping, like I said, maybe one more demotion, have him just work on some things and come back up. But yeah, he's an enigma, man. He's hard to figure out. I can't, like, I have him in a few leagues and I can't, like, put my finger on, like, what I should do with him. Like, at this point, I'm holding mostly just because you got to believe in the prospect pedigree and what he can do. But yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, this season, it seems kind of like a lost season, but next season he can come back. Right, and, you know, make some noise. Maybe, you know, if the Dodgers decide they want to pick up Trey Turner, that maybe they use Gavin Lux's trade bait and they can send him somewhere and he can get every day at bat somewhere else.
Yep. He needs to get some regular bats in AAA. I think it's kind of like the Joe Adell, where it's better to have him in AAA, get his confidence back up, let him succeed once again, get the head right, and then bring him back up. You know, maybe I'll probably bring him back up again if they do this. Back up for the stretch run in September, but I think give him a good month here. Give him August in AAA. Let him hit again. But yeah, I'm still in on Lux long term. Not quite as much as I was, let's say, 12 months ago. But like you mentioned, Mendy, look what he's done in AAA. You know, the minor league pedigree is definitely there. The raw skills are definitely there. Just needs to put it all together, and who knows if that'll happen. But that's gonna wrap us up here, Mendy. Man, this was fun. Thanks for coming on, man. This was a blast.
Thanks for having me, boys. Like I said, it's been long overdue that I was able to talk with you guys. Two of my favorite guys in the whole industry. And I was a total blast. I've been doing so much football stuff recently that it's like I haven't been able to break down baseball as much recently as I like to. And doing this with you guys, it's just, I was able to flex my baseball muscle, and it feels good. It feels really good right now.
Wait, what's football? What's football?
I think there's that Tom Brady. I think he's in football.
Oh, I've heard of him. Yeah. I didn't realize there was other sports besides baseball that existed. My bad. Real quick before we get out of here, Mendy, you know, I'll give you the floor here. I meant to do this in the beginning, but that intro threw us all off, I think. Floor is yours. Just kind of pump up what you guys are doing over at Triple Play and whatever else you want to pump out there.
Again, appreciate you guys having me. But yeah, of course, you can find me on Twitter at DMendy02. Usually a lot of stuff I do is you'll find through Triple Play at Triple Play Fantasy on Twitter. Really pushing the YouTube channel right now. We're at 497 subs, so we're trying to get to 500 by August 1st, since we're recording on July 31st here, so hopefully we'll make it. And just athlete interviews, any type of fantasy, baseball, basketball, or football content you'll find there. And we like to have a good time, movie minutes, donut eating, all the good stuff we like to do over
there.
That
was great. It's
fun stuff too. So,
yeah, like I said, your whole crew, you're all doing a great job. It's been fun to watch you guys, because you guys started your podcast last year when I started Five Tool with Jake and Jesse. So it's been fun to see in the last year and a half, see how much you guys have grown and your own site and the YouTube and all that, your athlete interviews. I'm gonna pose a challenge to you though. Get that Tom Brady guy on an interview. I want you to get Tom Brady. But no, seriously, you guys have had a lot of great interviews. So it's been really fun to see the growth of Triple Play. Check out Triple Play. It's at DMendy02. Chris is at Roto Clegg. I am at AirCross04. Our show at Fantrax Toolshed. We'll be back with you again in 2 days. Today is Saturday. We're releasing this one. And then Monday, we'll release the prospect version of this episode with all the prospects that changed hands. So make sure you tune in again for that. But until then, everybody take care.
Want to create a breakthrough gene therapy or life-saving vaccine? Pioneer aerospace excellence? Take your hospitality tech brand international? Montgomery County, Maryland is where you can do all that and more. Use our ideal location next to DC. Diverse world-class talent and our vast business resources to be the next company to make your mark and transform the world. Visit bnext.thinkmoco.com. That's bnext.thinkmoco.com to learn how we can help you create something remarkable.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.